Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I'm your host this week, John McGee, and joining me is our fantasy baseball guru who's knee deep in about 15 different fantasy drafts, at least one of which he's sure to get an email about during the course of this podcast. It's Darius Austin. How are the drafts going, mate?
They're okay. Yeah, I'm in one 18-team league, which we're in about the 14th round now. And then this invitational, which Tom is also taking part in, but in a different league to me. It looks like I'm about 5 picks away from my turn. So, yeah, I think probably I am actually going to get an email during this podcast and we can talk about who I'm picking, I suppose, at that point.
Nice, nice. Bit of interactive fantasy baseball podcasting.
Yeah, it's quite a common thing in fantasy baseball circles to sort of do the live draft, but there always ends up being those moments where you're just sort of sat around and they're either sort of missing whoever's getting picked or then there's suddenly a flurry of activity. It never really works that well. But maybe one pick will be okay.
Yeah, we can definitely try and do one pick. Your audition as Paul Sporer, you can explain why it is that you're picking whoever it is that you pick. So the majority of the conversation today is going to be addressing listener questions. So we've got a lot. We asked you for them on Tuesday and they've been dribbling in since then. Some of you have asked some really interesting and sensible baseball-based questions, which we'll definitely take our time to address. But after last week's drafting street furniture, I genuinely thought there were no more depths for us to plumb. But yeah, well, let's see how it goes. It's fair to say there's some pretty quirky ones here. Before we get on to listener questions, there's one or two topics that I thought it would be an interesting thing for us to address. The first of which is a subject close to your heart and very dear to you, which is the pending return to Major League level baseball of the freak himself, Mr. Tim Lincecum, who is reportedly due to sign with the Texas Rangers on a major league deal. So there was a question from Steve K, from Bush League Ramble about what sort of role you foresee Lincecum having this season. And also the question that Steve had was, is he going to be any good? And I think your answer is going to be, yeah, of course he is, right?
Yeah, of course. How could Tim Lincecum not be good? In my mind, it's still like 2012 and we've kind of just glossed over the last few years.
Well, yeah, let's not forget his 9.82 ERA at the Los Angeles Angels. I thought that was an interesting question from Steve, though, because there has been a bit of speculation about what role he's going to play with the Rangers, because their rotation looks pretty good. He could maybe be a sixth starter, maybe, but is he going to be a reliever?
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, I don't know that I would say their rotation is good, but I think they've got a lot of pieces there that they're going to try and fill it with. I don't really agree with all their decisions, especially trying to stick Mike Minor back in the rotation. I think he was last good in the rotation in 2013. Very good out of the bullpen last year, and now they seem to want to stick him back in when he basically hasn't been healthy. So I think there's some questionable decisions there, but I do think Lincecum has kind of struggled with his mechanics more as he's got older, and maybe a shorter stints and just using his fastball changeup combo, if those are both working and the velocity is back up, as it seems to be from the tryouts that major league teams went to and obviously saw enough to sign him to a major league deal. So I think he'll slot into their bullpen. He could be a pretty good bullpen piece if he's actually healthy and he's got those two killer pitches. So we'll see, but I kind of have a dream of Tim Lincecum closing for the Texas Rangers in a month's time, which would be pretty cool.
Yeah, even though the Rangers are, as we are well aware, somewhere quite low down the list of my favourite teams, a Texas Rangers team with Tim Lincecum on it is preferable to one without Tim Lincecum, and it would be great to see him back and looking, like you say, like the 2012 vintage, which was one of the most electric and brilliant pitchers to watch in his pomp. So fingers crossed we get...
Yeah, I'm sure there are people out there who are new to baseball who just saw Tim Lincecum put up a 9.82 ERA with the Angels and are wondering what the hell we're talking about. So get yourself on YouTube and watch some old Tim Lincecum highlights, because at his peak, especially early on, 2008-2009, he was one of the most unhittable pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, think sort of Chris Sale with a somehow even weirder pitching action.
Because he's a little guy as well, so he was sort of generating a lot of talk and momentum, and it was incredibly violent, but also a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, so from Tim Lincecum to another improbable story, which is the Minnesota Twins, who weren't a team that we got asked any questions about directly, but they are a team who are perhaps intriguing is the word. I think I just called them before we started the podcast the most interesting team in baseball at the moment. And I think that's because they're kind of doing stuff, right? They're looking to try and contend. They were a wild card team last year, seemingly out of nowhere. They've got a lot of really interesting, fringy players, a couple of potential breakout superstars, and then a load of mush, like a load of players who you don't really know anything about, like Kyle Gibson and Trevor May. And yet they're potentially going to be quite good. I don't know if you had any thoughts about whether they are dark horses or not.
Yeah, I think you're right about them being interesting, because when we're going to have some questions about this later, we've got all these like supposedly locked down divisional races, and you are kind of looking around going, well, we've got these four or five teams who are tanking, we've got these seven or eight teams who are definitely winning their division or getting a wild card. Where is the intrigue coming from? And I think the Twins are actually a team in that middle who seem to be trying to be good, and they have some really interesting players on the team. I mean, if Byron Buxton can hit his ceiling, that would be fantastic. He's an incredible defender. He showed some signs in the second half. I really like what Jorge Polanco, I shouldn't talk about this because I'm hoping to draft him in one of these leagues in a minute. he had a really impressive run down the stretch. Shortstop, they've got guys like Ryan Dozier, who's great. Jose Berrios could be an ace. Honestly, it reminds me a little bit, like, I felt the Yankees were quite uncertain going into last season, because you had these guys. Was Severino going to figure it out? What are you going to get out of Judge? Is Sanchez really as good as we think based on his first season? And they kind of obviously broke out in a big way. And I could see that happening with the Twins, or they could turn into a pile of mush, like you mentioned. But I think they're going to be a lot of fun to follow. And I could certainly see some of the remaining free agents still out there ending up on the team as well.
Yeah, we've had a couple of questions about that. So where are the Lance Lynns, the Alex Cobbs, the Jonathan Lucroy's going to land? And we can maybe address those in a bit more depth in a minute. But is the Twins are surely one of the teams on that list, with Milwaukee and maybe Philadelphia, perhaps?
Yeah, I think the Twins rotation doesn't look super exciting, especially now that Evan Santana is hurt and he was kind of the dependable anchor that they don't really have anywhere else. You've got sort of guys like Gibson, who's flashed but never really put it together over a consistent period of time. You've got veterans like Aníbal Sanchez, who was great a few years ago and now is not. You don't want him throwing 100 plus innings for you, really, I don't think. So if they can lock down someone like Lynn, who you can count on to get to 180 plus innings, I think that would really help the team. And they do seem like one of the few remaining landing spots that's likely, because when you have all these division leaders who kind of seem mostly set, really. Maybe I could see the Nationals making a move, because I think AJ Cole is their fifth starter right now, and that seems a bit questionable for them. But at the same time, are they not going to win the NL East? It's kind of hard to imagine unless something miraculous happens to the Mets. So, yeah, I think one of those guys seems pretty likely to end up on the Twins, and maybe you could see more than one. But I think they're going to be pretty interesting. And if they could add another starter, even if it's just an average guy, then that might push them over the edge, at least into the wild card race.
Great. So that's the Minnesota Twins. As I said, we've got a lot of questions, so we should probably get into them. I've got a bad feeling that some of these are going to take quite a lot of discussion, because some of them really are quite out there. The first couple, happily, it's a bit of a long toss to start with. So the first question comes from an account called The Fantasy Gospel. Maybe they're looking for a bit of a tip from you, but this to me seems like a pretty cut and dried question. So they had a poll earlier this week, and they asked for our opinion on what the answer should be to that poll. They're saying, assuming that Goldie, so Paul Goldschmidt, is off the board, which first baseman would you draft next? And their three choices were Votto, Freeman, or Rizzo. So I know where I'm going, but I wonder about you.
Yeah, I think I know where we're all going. We're probably insanely biased at this point anyway, but I think even if we weren't, that Votto is the answer. I think he's probably got the best approach at the plate of any hitter in baseball right now. And I'm not to say that it's not close. I think Freddie Freeman has become an exceptional hitter too, and he's not a huge amount behind for me. But I'm definitely taking Votto. And I did in one of these drafts that I'm in right now, actually, I had that decision to make, and I took Votto through.
Excellent. The question really for me, I was going to pick Votto, but, you know, huge man crush in our collective direction towards Joey Votto. He is, I think, our favorite player as a podcast. I think I'd take Votto over the humidor tamped down Paul Goldschmidt as well. Obviously, a bit more pop in Goldschmidt's bat, but maybe not so this year if they're trying to look after Robbie Ray's ex-fit.
Yeah, as much as I'm a fan of promoting Robbie Ray related interests, it's a very curious question. A lot of people in the fantasy are getting very tied up about it now, and we were having a long discussion last night in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits group about sort of seam height and spin rate and how the humidor might affect all these things. I will add that there are several people in the group rolling their eyes at this and saying, "I hate this stuff." But I thought it was great. I think it's really fascinating. But the thing with Goldschmidt is he runs, and as much as that's not really that valuable in real-life baseball relative to the rest of the production, that does give him the edge over these other guys. So I wouldn't worry too much about Goldschmidt in a fantasy league. I think he'll still be a perfectly fine first-round pick. He just might hit three or four less home runs than he would have done otherwise.
Absolutely. And Anthony Rizzo, after his actions and words over the last couple of weeks, is number one off the board of really good guys in baseball. And I think we'll just leave it there. Oh, I must say, just on that point, I doff my cap also to Chipper Jones, who this week has said some really sensible, moderate things about guns, which is the first time that he's done that. I thought it was quite a brave thing for a guy of his reputation to stand up and do in the current political climate in the US. So cap duly doffed to you again, Chipper, following your Hall of Fame nod, which was well and richly deserved. From politics, which we've been warned not to dip into because, stick to sports and all that. So we will. Question from Nick Clark, which I think is slightly tongue-in-cheek. Who will win the NL MVP? Will it be Bryant, Rizzo, or Schwarber? I think I know the answer to this, Darius. And if you don't mind my saying, it's going to be Joey Votto, right?
Votto. I mean, depending on which team you follow, I think Ronald Acuna would probably gather a lot of support amongst the corners of the internet. I mean, Kyle Schwarber has lost a lot of weight. He's in the best shape of his life, don't you know?
I have heard, yeah.
So.
What's it going to do to his pop? A question that far too many people are spending far too much time trying to answer. Do you have any thoughts on that Ronald Acuna's hat, by the way? That's also been one of those great spring training stories that literally just won't go away. This is why spring training is terrible, people, because you have days and days and days of people arguing and talking about whether it's okay that Ronald Acuna wears his hat wonky.
Yeah, I have the only thought I have on Ronald Acuna's hat is that he should be allowed to wear it however he wants. Obviously, the Braves think this is important for some reason that he wears it straight. I have no comments on that other than to say he's probably going to be the second best player on their team the moment he steps on the field. So let him wear his hat how he wants.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Ender Inciarte might not be Darius, but there you go. That's a name for you to conjure with. Right, so we've got a couple of questions from Mike Ivory. His first one I think we've addressed because he asked about Cobb and Lynn and whether they'd end up with the Twins. And I think we agreed that they maybe might. Certainly one of them probably will. As we said, I think the other teams in play for those two is probably Milwaukee. Maybe Oakland, depending on where they feel they are in their rebuild. It's just I had another thought about this, actually. The Mariners, what are they doing? They don't have a rotation. They've got a slightly broken Felix Hernandez and a perpetually broken but brilliant James Paxton, and then nothing. So who's going to pitch for them? So they could be an outside chance. They've got a good hitting lineup, but they don't have it.
Any pitches whatsoever. The only thing I would say about the Mariners is that Jerry DePoto probably wants somebody else to sign the player so he can trade for him instead. yeah, I agree about. I'm going to do a brief plug because I'm writing about Felix for BP tomorrow. So look out for my piece on whether Felix is finished or not, Baseball Prospectus. But I do think there's an awful lot of injury risk in this rotation. They've got Mike Leake, I guess. He's been a pretty durable guy. But yeah, Felix, Paxton, Iwakuma. There's a bunch of guys who've been injured a lot. So yeah, I could definitely see them going to Seattle. That's not a stretch at all.
Okay, so a really good question from Mark Smith, and I thought this was quite a hard question, so we'll see where you go with it. Could we come up with a player swap that improves both of the teams?
Yeah, I mean, again, the first team that I went to, like in my mind, was the Brewers with their outfield depth. So I was thinking maybe start with them and then go around looking for a team that needs an outfielder. But also has some surplus somewhere else to trade away. And that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know if you actually came up with any other teams that we can match up on this.
Yeah, so I interpreted Mark's question slightly differently. He did clarify that if we wanted to talk about prospects, we could, but obviously I know nothing about prospects who aren't part of the Red Sox. So I was looking at potentially a sort of wash trade at an MLB level. And I always get drawn to the same player that everybody seemingly who writes about trade rumors in baseball gets drawn to, which is Jackie Bradley. Seemingly everybody wants to move him away from the Red Sox in order to improve something else. Now, I was thinking about whether there was a team in baseball who needed a really good outfielder who had a better shortstop than Xander Bogaerts. And I was coming up a bit empty, to be honest. I don't think there was a, unless you could trade Bradley one for one for Manny Machado, which I don't.
Yeah, I mean, clearly a shortstop that's better than Xander Bogaerts and potentially a questionable outfield if you don't really believe in Lonnie Chisenhall and you think Brantley's basically going to be crocked for the rest of his.
Yeah, that could work. Okay, so it's Francisco Lindor for Jackie Bradley. I think that works.
Somehow, sure, I would do that.
Yeah, somehow I've got a feeling that's not. Maybe we could go Jackie Bradley and Xander Bogaerts for Francisco Lindor. Move Andrew Benintendi to center field and have JD Martinez or Hanley Ramirez play in left field.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose another option is to, we already mentioned the Schwarbster. But everybody's been saying he should be on an American League team forever. So who needs a DH that will trade something to the Cubs?
Well, the Orioles need some players, but they certainly don't need a DH.
Yeah, I mean, which of the Orioles Cubs one, I suppose?
Machado, but Machado, you know, that's the only position where they've got. Well, it's not the only position; it's the main position where they've got a player that they want to keep there. That's a tough question, Mark. I think we maybe need to come back to that another time, maybe when we've got Ben and Tom involved as well, because I think that's a really good question, a good poser. So thanks for that one, Mark. Andy Lysette, I quite like this question too. It's a bit of a wacky one, but I've got a pretty obvious answer. If you had to be sat in a locked room for 3 hours, who would be the worst company, Derek Jeter or A-Rod? So do you want to go first on that one?
I mean, it's got to be Jeter, hasn't it? A-Rod's actually quite charismatic on TV. I feel like you could have a conversation with him. It might be completely off the wall, but I think it would be... Jeter has spent his career cultivating this sort of, well, almost lack of personality, really. And so I have no idea what he would be like if you had like a genuine conversation with him. But based on his interaction with the fans and the Marlins, it doesn't seem like it would be an awful lot of fun. So definitely Jeter for me.
Yeah, Andy, I think, said that it would be a really difficult decision, and I didn't think it was at all. I'm definitely going to go with the guy who has a picture of himself as a centaur and would be able to talk to you about, you know, the great times he has with J-Lo, not with Mr. Gift Basket, the man who reputedly was sat on his own sofa watching himself beating his chest and saying, "Yeah, Jeets." That's speculation. Please don't seem to slander Derek. come on, you know, everyone has to pay. Everyone has to pay. Would you have to pay? I mean, to be sat
locked. Don't go letting those kids in for free. How would you do that?
Yeah, Andy, I mean, you thought you'd asked us a difficult question, but come on, try harder. Definitely, A-Rod. Definitely every single day of the week.
I suspect that maybe amongst the general populace, the hatred for A-Rod still runs strong.
Yeah, it does, but goodness me. They clearly haven't seen him mugging off Pete Rose and that limb from MLB.
Yeah, how can you hate anyone who goes around mugging off Pete Rose?
That's a better question. Who would you rather spend 3 hours with, Derek Jeter or Pete Rose? Degsy, let's have a good time.
Rose would just spend 3 hours complaining about how he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and try and flog you just for men. Right, next question is from Doc Riddle. Will questions regarding juiced balls by the MLB be addressed finally? And how will the commissioner respond to the MLB Players Association's grievance? So there's been a bit of talk on this week. There's going to be some sort of climate controlling of the balls this year. They're going to be kept in a locked room and they're going to have tests done on them and so on. So I heard Ben and Jeff talking about this on Effectively Wild earlier in the week. So I guess that's his attempt to address it, is it not?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, his public attempts to address it have been to say, nope, nothing is different, which, as Ben and other people who have analysed the balls have kind of pointed to, the parameters by which they meet the MLB requirements are incredibly wide, and that doesn't really mean anything. So I think Rob Manfred is going to continue to publicly say that there's nothing wrong with the balls, but perhaps... you know, it seems like he might be doing something behind the scenes to see whether he can level things out. But I don't think that he's going to want to change too much because he thinks fans want to see strikeouts and dingers. So I think that's probably going to carry on.
And I think he's probably right, despite what some old angry people think. I certainly want to see strikeouts and dingers. I can't speak for anybody else. Our next question is from Adam Perry, who I can describe only as a very twisted individual. With spring training in full flow, which member of the Batflips and Nerds team, John, Tom, Darius, he's missed Ben out, but I'm going to add Ben in, would be most likely to be seen on a Florida beach in a pair of Speedos? I just don't even know where to start with that.
I think this is between Tom and Ben, isn't it? Because Tom is constantly overseas anyway. And Ben seems like the most likely member of the team to wear a pair of Speedos. So I don't know which combination of those things happens, but I can easily see like Tom in a month sending us a message from a beach in Florida wearing a pair of Speedos just to make this come true.
Yeah, well, he's currently in Spain, which is why he's not here this week. So we haven't yet had a picture of him in a pair of Speedos in Spain, but I genuinely wouldn't be surprised. We did have a picture of him doing the old hot dog in the Azores a couple of months ago when he was on a trip. Yeah, not he gets to some okay places. He also does seem to get to some pretty horrendous places. I would have said it's Tom. I can say safely it's not going to be me because I obviously got commando, mate. also, I wouldn't be in Florida because there's no good baseball down there. Whatever.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. There will be no good baseball in Florida this year.
Because there's only spring training, which is the worst, and then the Marlins and the Rays, which are marginally better than spring training. Okay, that question is really quite worrying, Adam. But, you know, each to their own. Next question is from Matt Clough, which brings it to a rather more sensible and sober level. So sticking our necks on the line, who has to settle for a wild card spot? Is it the Yankees or the Red Sox, or is it both behind the Orioles?
I wanted to ask you before we answer this question, would it actually be worse for you to all year if they were winning the division?
Would it be worse for me to what, sorry? You just broke up there.
To write about them. If instead of them being terrible, if they were actually winning the AL East, would you actually find that more painful to write about?
That's a good question. I don't know, actually. because I really haven't considered that they'd be good at all.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it until I read this question, and I thought,
because they won't be.
I hate that even more than writing about what appears to be a miserable team on paper.
I think I'd probably prefer it, to be honest. I mean, given that my allegiance is to the Red Sox, they're still there, but they're not quite as strong as they were maybe 18 months ago, as I've become a more rounded fan / fan of the Brewers. I think I'd probably marginally prefer them to be good. I mean, Mark Trumbo hitting dingers is good. Michael Givens and Brad Brack being good is good. I think I'd like them to be good. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I won't if that comes to pass. But I'm almost convinced that they won't be. Do you know that I'm going on Justin Maguire's own Orioles podcast to talk about this?
Are you really?
Yeah, you've got me in really deep. So Justin, who of course was a guest of this podcast a few weeks ago on our book podcast, who is also the proprietor of Baseball by the Book. He has his own Orioles podcast. Justin is a big Orioles fan, has been for his whole life, and yeah, he's tapped me up to go on there and talk about Jet Bandy in a couple of weeks' time. So watch this space.
So you've gone very quickly from being forced to write about the Orioles to now appearing on Orioles focused podcast.
Yeah, I think so. Having seen the guests who Justin's had already, it's, you know, people from the Baltimore Sun, it's people from Camden Depot and so on. So, you know, good, well-known Orioles publications. I think he just thought he'd mix it up a bit by getting me on there, just twining.
Yeah. I suppose I should actually answer this question. I'm going to say...
answer Matt's question.
Yeah, to answer Matt's question, I'm going to say it's really close. I think the Red Sox have to settle for the wildcard spot.
Yeah, so do I, regretfully. I think the bullpens are going to be the difference. I don't think that the Yankees lineup is going to be as good as it was last year, even with Stanton. You know, it Judge and Sanchez and even people like Gardner can't be that good. You know, they can't maintain that level because it was unbelievable. And nor can Stanton. He's not going to hit 59 home runs. I'm really sorry. I'd love it. Like Kevin Keegan again, as I am nearly every week now. But I just don't see it. I think the Red Sox have got a better rotation, but the bullpen's just, it's on a different plane. So yeah, I think the Red Sox are going to finish in a wildcard spot, but I don't think there'll be much in it. And I think the Red Sox will comfortably be in that wildcard spot.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the most interesting divisional race.
Good. So, a question from Stephen Pipe. Of the teams who are widely expected to reach the postseason, and he's listed the Nationals, the Cubs, the Astros, the Dodgers, and the Yankees, which team will end up with the worst record, and do we think any of these teams will miss the playoffs? I think we should ask last year's Mets and Giants. Do you?
Yeah. I guess I'm going to say the Nationals because I think they might have the least incentive to be any good. But yeah, it's unlikely to be the Dodgers or the Yankees, I don't think. I think the Dodgers are going to have teams that push them, and the Yankees obviously got the Red Sox there. I think the Cubs are going to be better than they were last year, and they still won 92 games. And the Astros just still got a ridiculous lineup, and now they have Verlander and Keuchel in their rotation. So it's really hard for me to see them not having a great record. So yeah, I think maybe the Nats just have a slightly off year, and they've got a few injury prone guys on there, and they probably don't need to go out and win 98 games anyway because the Mets. So yeah, I don't think any of them are missing the playoffs, but I'll say the Nationals.
Yeah, I think I agree entirely with that diagnosis. I don't think any of them are going to miss the playoffs. I think that the Nats are going to be marginally the worst. The Cubs are probably the next best bet, but their rotation is going to be better than the one that was leaning on John Lackey last year. And Kyle Hendricks didn't have a really top year, so he'll probably be a little bit better than he was last year. So, yeah, good question, Stephen, and I can see where you're coming from. But unfortunately, we're not giving you much in the way of cold comfort. So question from Jeff Enderby. Who are your top three starting rotations, assuming the teams are fully fit? Show you're working, Darius.
Yeah, well, the thought that I actually had, and it depends how far we're allowed to go with the definition of fully fit, but I think you might have to say the Mets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I'm allowed to make Matt Harvey
fully fit ever again.
Surgery, and they've got and Syndergaard and Steven Matz was great when he was healthy, and now he can't throw his slider. So I think the Mets rotation might be the best if they were all healthy.
Yeah, I didn't write those down.
Yeah, so the Nats are a tempting one because they've got two aces basically. I think the Astros is kind of an interesting one to me because like McCullers is great, but he might also just pitch five innings every start, so I don't know how much that qualifies really. Same kind of thing for the Dodgers. Kershaw and Rich Hill and Alex Wood are all really good, but only one of those pitches actually is potentially like 200 innings, and even Kershaw's got health concerns. So, yeah, I guess if I can also give Rich Hill 200 innings, then I would say the Dodgers. And then, yeah, the Cubs, I think I would consider maybe the Cubs as well. Depending on how, I think Darvish is going to be really good this year. I've kind of bet on him in a couple of leagues already. I think him switching to the NL, he's another year removed from his Tommy John. So I think he's going to have a great year, and they've already got Quintana and Lester and Hendricks. So I think they could have four potential studs in their rotation.
And Tyler Chatwood.
And Charlie Chatwood, of course, who now that he's out of course is going to be amazing, honestly.
Yeah, of course he is. I had the Cubs. The Cubs are on my list for the reasons that you've outlined. The Nats, of course, right in there. Joe Ross. He doesn't love a bit of Joe Ross. And I was going to stick up for the Red Sox as well. Obviously, massive homer pick, but a fit David Price, a fit Chris Sale. Rick Porcello, having taken his magic 2016 elixir. And Drew Pomeranz, last year's vintage of Drew Pomeranz, wouldn't mind seeing him again. And then just whoever you want as a fifth starter. Eduardo Rodriguez, if he can stay fit, obviously still has the potential to be a number two at least. So yeah, I think the Red Sox are probably in that conversation as well. Yeah, it's a tough question. Good question, Jeff. Right, so the next question is not a good question, which is a question from our very own dear friend Ben Carter, or as we have to now call him, the Pyeongchang One, who I understand is actually going to return from Korea this week. I believe it when I see it. He's been there for 2 months. Ben's question is this. So which players are most likely to secretly moonlight as a musician at a jazz club, and what would their stage names be? One vote for John Saxford, the recently signed Toronto Blue Jays relief pitcher. So I, unsurprisingly, have put far too much time into thinking about this. But did you have any before I reel off the stupidly long list of mine?
Yeah, I mean, I felt underqualified to answer this question. I kept thinking of old players like Steve Sachs, Duke Snyder. That's a very jazz name to me. I think I need to give you the floor for this one, because this could take some time, couldn't it?
Yeah, so I've kind of split them up. So I want to give a bit of a hat tip first of all to our regular contributor and regular correspondent, Chris Brown, who had a couple of really good ones of his own. So the first of which I really liked, was Dizzy Gillespie, which is obviously Dizzy Gillespie, the late and very famous trumpeter from the 40s and 50s. My question to Chris was, shouldn't Dizzy Gillespie be playing on the Orioles? Because famously, Dizzy Gillespie was known as Bird and had his own jazz club, which was called Birdland, and obviously Birdland, as we know, is the home of the Baltimore Orioles at Camden Yards. So yeah, maybe Dizzy Gillespie should be transferring to play shortstop on the Orioles over in Birdland. So good one, Chris. Chris also suggested Gerrit Coltrane. So obviously that's a John Coltrane nod there. I would like to remind Chris that John was not the only brilliant Coltrane in the jazz world. There was also Alice Coltrane, and happily we've got Coltrane Calhoun, who can step in for her. Yeah. We've also got Dusty Chet Baker. That's the middle nickname that no one ever knew he had. Getting a bit more out there, and these get worse and worse. This is obviously just in the old school jazz world. Ryan Mad Sun Ra. Yeah, bit of space jazz there for everybody. Ben Gamelonious Monk, if you're into your jazz piano. That was my personal favorite. And Duke Wellington Castillo. And now, some of you probably haven't listened to a lot of jazz lately. There's a lot of good new jazz out there, and I'm going to mention a couple of names now. Please feel free to write them down. I'm particularly partial to the work of a band called Polar Bear, or Nola Bear, as we're going to go with them here. And there's a guy called Shabaka Hutchings, who plays the saxophone and the clarinet in a lot of bands, and he's got three particular bands who I just want to give a name check to. So Melt Yourself Downs, and you're thinking, who's Downs? Of course, he's a Chinese Professional Baseball League pitcher, Darren Downs. Yeah, there's the Taiwanese baseball plug for this week. Shabaka's also in a band called the Sons of Lamet, actually the Sons of Kemet, but we've got to get a Danielson Lamet nod in even when Tom's not here. And also one called The Comet Is Coming. So in our instance, it's going to be Clemente Is Coming, because again, we want to mention Roberto Clemente every week. Lastly, and I promise you, lastly, we're talking about a couple of jazz residencies. These are concept albums, which are a fusion of jazz and baseball. The first of which is between Miles Davis and Bernie Brewer on their famous jazz baseball fusion Bitches Brew Crew. And lastly, Denard Spann's own jazz magnum opus, Sketches of Spann, which if you've not got, you should definitely try and get hold of. If you didn't fast forward through that, then you're a wonderful, beautiful person.
I'm just wondering what the Venn diagram of our audience that also got all of those jazz references.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be quite small, particularly the more modern ones. if anyone laughed at Sketches of Spann, I'll be happy. I'll be a happy man. If you liked Sketches of Spann, please send us a tweet. Okay, so our next question is from the Fuerteventura one himself, Mr. Tom Pringle. I think this is a question for me. What's worse, covering the Orioles for a year or watching spring training?
Yeah, question for you. I've never covered the Orioles for a year. I guess I've also never been forced to watch all of spring training, which seems like it would be the fairer corollary for this. I think as much as it seems like it's painful, I would rather watch the Orioles for a year because it's still Major League Baseball and they're still going to play some good teams. So I'll take that.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I'm going to say it's a push, but you may be converting me. Okay, so if you thought that Ben's question was completely off the wall, he can always be surpassed by our regular question contributor and good friend and sometime podcast joiner. That didn't come out quite right, but we all know what I meant. Rob Navera from Bournemouth, another one of those Rays fans that there seems to be far too many of over here in the UK. So here's Rob's question. It's quite high concept, and for those of you who've heard Rob's questions before, that'll come as no surprise. Logan Forsythe walks into a bar. Stay with this. The bar is full of second basemen, and he knocks over Jed Lowry's pint. Oi, watch it, Ginge, shouts Lowry. Daniel Murphy flips a table, and a rumble ensues featuring all of the second basemen with at least 50 games in 2017. How does the fight progress / end? This is like a second year logic paper question in a philosophy degree, Rob. Did you have any thoughts on this? I had a couple of thoughts, but I don't know if you want to try and get yours off your chest first.
Well, I was wondering, as I've never taken a second year philosophy paper, what your response would be from a philosophical perspective. But
well, neither have I, because I did a law degree. It just struck me as very convoluted.
If you did philosophy, please send us in your answer.
I did a philosophy module. What would Wittgenstein, how would Wittgenstein and Kierkegaard answer this this particular logic problem, which is talking about second baseman? Yeah, I don't know.
I think, I mean, we know Rougned Odor has got a good right hook on him, right?
Oh, yeah, so, of course. Yeah, but he'd probably miss.
Yeah.
That's the only time.
Probably miss. He'd have a lot of swings and eventually he'd make contact with somebody.
Yeah. That's the irony of that punch. He hit somebody for the first time ever.
I feel like Dustin Pedroia would be like really good. Like this is sort of the wrestling angle, but like he'd be doing really well. And then somebody would just come up and whack him in the knee with a pool cue. And that would be his fight over.
That would be the end. Yeah. I've recently been rewatching all of the Star Wars films. And the first thing that sprung to my mind was that Jose Altuve and Ronald Torres would be like Ewoks, you know, just sort of buzzing around everyone's ankles with like tripping them up with ropes and everything. Maybe like doing a sort of double team with like the little dudes sort of loading it over these 6'4" behemoth.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there aren't that many 6'4" second basemen, are they?
Johan Moncada would probably crush everyone's soul.
Moncada is a strong dude. Jonathan Scope, he's a big guy with some power. Yeah. I reckon Josh Harrison would be really good because he's great at getting out of rundowns. So presumably also nobody would be able to hit him.
Yeah, my other two suggestions were that potentially Eduardo Nunez looks like he might have some connections in the underworld. There's something about that well-groomed beard. Just says, I've seen things. So I wonder if he could maybe call some of his guys and get them to come along. And also, we've already mentioned one well-known hunter in baseball on this, which is Chipper Jones, but Brian Dozier. I've heard a couple of interviews with him, and he's I think he's pretty handy with a bow and maybe with a gun. So he'd be a guy certainly to have on your side, would Brian Dozier.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so that's it, I think, Rob. We've gone around the houses a bit there. I think it would end in a fight to death between Eduardo Nunez and his underworld.
I think I'm going to say Josh Harrison wins in like sort of, I don't know, maybe somebody like Scope is still out there and he's sort of doing the Ali Rumble in the Jungle style. He's just baiting him and eventually he gets like so tired that he just collapses and Josh Harrison's the only one left standing.
Either that or Nunez and Dozier turn up with a whole battery of ammunition, start spraying it around, and Josh Harrison's just so quick that he keeps getting out of the pickle of the bullets, and then they run out.
Like the Matrix.
Yeah, like the Matrix, and they just then die of exhaustion, and Josh Harrison wins. Whatever happens, or maybe Daniel Murphy wins, because, of course... He's got salvation. God is on his side. Some thoughts there, Rob, at least. I think we've taken that far more seriously than it deserved. Okay, Hal Stewart, a couple of questions from Hal, one of which is straightforward, the second of which I really, again, looks like it's from a second year philosophy paper. So the first one, let's go with that one first. Which of the teams tip to tank do you think will have a surprise season, if any? I've got a thought on this. So
again, I suppose it depends on how liberal you are with your tanking definition. Mm-hmm. I actually think the A's are going to be pretty good, and I think people probably think they're terrible. I could honestly see the Rays being fine, and they've been a tanking for the last couple of weeks, but I think they'll do all right and they'll win a decent number of games. I think that probably qualifies as a surprise to a lot of people who've been laughing at the Rays tank blog for the last week or so. But yeah, they'd be my picks, I think.
I think those are good picks. I think my pick is the Reds. I think it needs quite a lot of things to go right for them in order for that to be the outcome, but it's not unforeseeable. Their lineup is really good, you know, from Billy Hamilton at the top through Votto through to a, you know, pretty decent hitting catcher in Tucker Barnhart. They defend pretty well. Their problem is that their pitching is pretty ropey. But we talked with C. Trent Rosecrans the other week about how good Luis Castillo is. If Anthony Desclafani is as good as he was the year before last, before he got injured, that'll be a real plus. And then they need one or two of those young guys, you know, the Sal Romanos or the Amir Garretts to hit, and they're going to have a pretty good rotation. What they've got in the bullpen, who knows, but that could be said of any bullpen. So, yeah, the Reds are my tip, if they're anything. I mean, surprise season for the Reds would be finishing third, and I think that that's not outside the realms of possibility, because I think that outside the Cubs and the Brewers, that's a pretty poor division. Right, so Hal's next question is just Tim Tebow question mark, and he clarifies, that's my question. So I guess we can take that wherever, whichever way we wish to.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think the fascinating thing about Tebow is the Mets continuing pretense that he's going to be a major league player. I think Sandy Alderson said that again last week, which I don't know if the theory behind that is it will sort of keep up the jersey sales, or if they genuinely believe they just sort of don't want to be so obvious that they're doing it to get more people in their minor league parks, that they feel the need to say something like Tim Tebow is going to be in the major leagues as a 30-year-old guy who didn't play baseball for 10 years. You know, I guess I could be wrong. Michael Jordan couldn't hack it. Tim Tebow didn't hit all that well as a guy who was maybe 8 or 9 years older than all of his competition last year. So it seems incredibly far-fetched, but, you know, the Mets maybe know something I don't. It seems unlikely based on how the organization's been run lately, but it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's correct, and I agree with all of it. So taking Hal's question in a slightly different direction, which is, I think my interpretation of this was, Tim Tebow, why is this charade still going on? Why are we all pretending that this is even in any way feasible, logical, or anything else? I don't know, Hal. I just don't understand what the Mets are at this stage, other than some sort of high concept farce. I would genuinely...
This would be a great philosophy exam question, wouldn't it? If you just got in and that was it, just Tim Tebow question mark written on a piece of paper. That was absolutely all you got.
I wouldn't be surprised if this is just all some high concept art project. You know, like a film that Joaquin Phoenix and Casey Affleck made a few years ago, where Joaquin Phoenix pretended to be a rapper for like a year and a half and just kept it going, like that this was really, he was quitting being an actor in order
to... Watch out for Joaquin Phoenix managing one of the Mets minor league affiliates.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix channeling Buck Showalter. Have you heard that Jonah Kerry podcast with Buck Showalter? He just comes...
I have not.
One of the most dour individual. The first 10 minutes is all about basset hounds. It could not be less interesting if I tried. Like, firstly, who knew that Buck Showalter would be into basset hounds? And then you think about what Buck Showalter looks like, and he actually looks like a basset hound. And then that's the most interesting thing about the whole podcast. It's so dull.
Well, I was going to listen to it, but I think I've already heard all I need to know, so...
Trust me, you don't even need to hear him talking about basset hounds, because it's clearly something he's passionate about, and yet there's so little emotion in his answer about basset hounds. So yeah, there's that. And Jonah, being Jonah, tries to get him really worked up about the fact that one of them's called Atticus, and tries to sort of draw him on why it's called Atticus, and he just goes, oh yeah, it's called after Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird. There's not really anything about... you know, civil rights or anything there. It's just literal. Okay, Buck, thanks for the really great
interview. Sounds like a great interview.
Yeah, and if Jonah Kerry can't draw intrigue out of an individual, then really, really they have nothing to proffer. Anyway, enough bloody Orioles. Bloody Orioles, enough. Because we've got a question from Baseball Brit the man who doesn't like to be identified by anything other than his pseudonym. We occasionally give away his real name, but he says to us, don't tell anyone what my real name is. I teach children and they might find out. So Baseball Brit asks, Pagota projects the closest divisional race will be the NL Central, which is to have the Cubs to win by a full 7 games. Putting the projections aside, do you think more needs to be done to increase competitiveness and fan interest later in the season? For example, restructuring of how teams qualify for the postseason, perhaps? Good question.
I don't think it's a real problem. I suppose it depends on what level you're talking about the fan interest. I think the teams that have a good park experience, people are still going to go to the park. And the teams that are terrible and don't actually have any fans in their local area, like, you know, the Rays, don't get anybody in the park anyway. I don't think Cleveland's drawn particularly well, despite the fact they've been the best team in the AL Central the last couple of years. So I don't think something needs to be done from that perspective. I think something needs to be done about the structure of the whole arbitration system and team control, and the fact that one of the best ways to be a good competitive team for a long time is to tank for a little while and get a bunch of high draft picks. I think probably addressing that would have a knock-on effect of addressing something like this. But I also think it wasn't all that long ago that we had an incredibly sort of even league. There seemed to be a lot of parity just 2-3 years ago. And it's only the last couple of years that we've developed this. Oh, well, it's obvious who's winning every division. So I think these things go through cycles, and it won't be that long until we see a lot more competitiveness again, with maybe 3 or 4 teams in some divisions, possible winners.
Yeah. And as we've said throughout, the Twins and the Brewers, albeit they didn't quite get over the line, they surprised everyone last year. And we've talked about a few teams who might be able to do that. The A's, I think you're right. The Mariners, again, could be pretty good. That's a good question, Joey. There was a really good article by JJ Cooper from Baseball America about a suggestion called a tank tax, which was if a team loses over a certain percentage of games two years in a row, then they have a penalty, which is dropping 10 places in the draft. So if it looks like they're trying to get the number one pick a couple of years in a row, then they pick at 11 or 15. I quite like that idea. That I'm with you. I think that arbitration drafting is the real concern, not the postseason or anything like that. Although I know that Korea has a where Baseball Brit, I nearly said his name there, where Baseball Brit lives, has a really, really wacky playoff system as to who qualifies in it. Maybe next time BB comes on the podcast, we can ask him about how it works in Korea and whether that's a better idea. Okay, we're getting to the last few questions here. So Blake Finney, our US-based Nationals correspondent, asks, if the Nationals sign Jake Arrieta, personally, I hope they don't, how long before we rename them the Washington Borises? Immediately, Blake, immediately is the answer to that question.
Yeah. Mike Rizzo hang around? I think he might as well just do it straight away.
Quite so. A couple more questions. This is a good one from Ben Salvi. If the game is on the line and you can pick any pitcher in baseball, who do you pick to get you one more out? And likewise, one batter to get you the hit to win the game, who are you picking?
I think I know there's a lot of debate about whether like the ace starters would be even better in the bullpen or not if they were to convert. But I think I want Kenley Jansen, actually. I think I want that guy who's, even when you know the pitch that's coming, you still can't hit it the vast majority of the time. So I'm going to take Jansen if I'm picking a pitcher. And if I want a batter to get the hit, well, it's probably got to be Joey, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I thought that second question, it depended on the situation. Like if you've got a guy on third base, I'm going to pick Altuve because he's got the highest average. And it depends whether Ichiro's retired or not as well. The other one that came into my head, if you're looking for an all-rounder, Joey, although he might potentially draw a walk, and it depends if he's got any protection behind him.
Yeah, what is the situation?
what's the situation, Ben? Come on, think about this. So I, the player I had in my head was an all-rounder, which was Robinson Cano. Could hit you a walk-off bomb, could also hit you a gapper. Yeah, that was the one that I dwelled on that question for far, far too long before coming to an answer. The pitcher one, I like you, it was an absolute no-brainer. Craig Kimbrell, end. Right, and the last question, which is from Les, who runs the Mets UK account. I'm going to take this one. I won't throw this to you. Any word on the streets yet about any MLB events this year in the UK, like MLB Battlegrounds? Well, Les, no, is the answer, but I hope so, is the real answer. And I will say, watch this space, because maybe we'll have a bit more on that for you next week. I probably can't give away any more than that, other than to say next week's podcast will be a special one, and keep your eyes peeled for it, because we might be able to answer some of those questions for you. So yeah, that's a little bit of intrigue and a little bit of a hook to get everyone interested in next week's podcast. Have I piqued your interest, Darius? Are you excited?
You have piqued my interest. You're very good at the teaser promo. So yeah, I'm excited. And I think we know the games are coming next year, and I would be very surprised if there wasn't anything else in advance of those to drum up the interest. So yeah, I'm very excited. Looking forward to seeing what comes next week.
Yeah, as am I. So yeah, hopefully that's whet the appetite for what we've got on the horizon. So all that remains, those being all the questions, is for us to say goodbye. By the way, did you get to draft a player? Did it come through you?
No, we're stuck on someone called Joe Galena's Lod at the moment. It's still three more picks to me. Got a few guys. Judge is still on the board. We're at pick 21 at the moment. Anthony Rizzo is still out there. So is Freeman, Francisco Lindor, and our favorite podcast favorite Toby Boehringer is out there as well.
Big Tobes. Hey, you've got some. You're going to get a good player off the board anyway. Up, I think we can safely say that. So. Other than listening in to your efforts to become the next Chris Crawford or Paul Sporer, where can we find you? Where can we find your Felix blog tomorrow?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. You can find my Felix blog and many other things over at Baseball Prospectus. Absolute ton of fancy articles going up every week there, not just from me, a lot of great writers. Rankings and sort of dynasty rankings, all sorts of different features. We've got over 20 different articles per week on the different positions, so tons of content there. You do often have to pay for mine, but I promise you that I put a lot of work into them, and there is great content. If you don't like my work, you're bound to find some content from other writers. And if you're into prospects as well, the prospect team is fantastic at BP. They do a lot of great work both for fantasy and just general prospecting, so that's another great reason to subscribe. And then you can also find me at, I've got something coming at BP Wrigleyville about Albert Almora, which was just a random thing that I identified, so that'll be going up soon. And if you are looking for some team previews, step over to Banished to the Pen, where we are doing a team preview series to follow alongside Effectively Wild's podcast. So every day, or within the day that the podcast comes out, we'll also have a preview for that team. And I believe we'll be having a preview on the Brewers from a certain newly minted Brewers fan coming up soon as well. So that will be one thing helpful.
Yeah, I was going to plug that. So yeah, I'll be writing the Banished to the Pen Brewers preview, which we'll tweet out next week. You can find me somewhere in a dark corner shaking and shouting no about the Orioles. Otherwise, probably you can find me on the internet or something. I would encourage you to go to batflipsandnerds.com, where we've had yet again another awesome week in terms of people churning out excellent content for us. There's a really good Pacota Projections piece from Baseball Brit, and an awesome, and I mean awesome, piece about this year's Detroit Tigers and how awful they're going to be to watch by Jed Oliver, which you should definitely check out. If not for anything else, just for the amazing picture of the 1980s Detroit Tigers badge. Okay, that's everything. That's all we've got time for. All that remains is for me to wish you a very, very pleasant day. Goodbye.